Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for March the 9th, 2020. This is Air Force veteran David Corey, along with my co-host, Richard Hurley. Thanks for joining us this evening. Hello, Richard.
Hey, David, and good evening, everybody, and welcome to our show tonight. We have lots of news and information for veterans and their families, so stay tuned. We have a special guest from the American Legion in our first segment this evening, and then more news from Washington in our second segment. But I'll first remind you, everyone, this is a call-in show. We welcome your views, your comments, and your questions. So call us at any time during the show at 1-888-627-6008. Again, that toll-free number is 1-888-627-6008. Back to you, David.
Thanks, Richard. Our special guest tonight is John Rotter, the press secretary for the American Legion National Commander. Mr. Rotter is a veteran of the United States Marine Corps. After his military service back in the 1980s, he earned a BA in political science at the University of Houston and a master's degree in journalism at the University of Missouri in Columbia, Missouri. He also graduated from the Defense Information School's basic print journalism course, photojournalism course, and editor's course. He has previously served as the editor of the American Legion magazine. In his long career, he has also worked as a senior writer with the Heritage Foundation in Washington, D.C., as managing editor of the National Tribune Stars and Stripes, and as a daily newspaper reporter in Rosenberg, Texas. Mr. Rotter has written more than 1,000 articles and has interviewed many government leaders and celebrities, including former President George W. Bush, Vice President Mike Pence, former Vice President Al Gore, Senator John McCain, former Homeland Security Secretary Tom Ridge, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, actor James Arness, the late Meet the Press host Tim Russert, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, heavyweight boxing champion George Foreman, entertainer Charlie Daniels, and dozens of other celebrities and public officials. He also spent February of 2007 embedded with the Marine and U.S. Army troops in Al-Anbar province in Iraq. He currently lives in Indianapolis with his family, and he is a member of American Legion Post 500 in Speedway, Indiana. Let's welcome John Rotter to the Veterans News Hour. Welcome, John. How's it going?
Doing great. It's good to be with you guys.
Well, it's our privilege to have you with us as our guest, John. It's a good week for you to be on our show. For our listeners, American Legion has many projects and legislative goals. Many veteran groups have been testifying before the House and Senate Veteran Affairs Committee the past couple weeks. And this week, it's the American Legion's turn. So, John, what will the American Legion's leadership recommend to Congress this week?
Well, we have a number of goals on our legislative agenda. Our national commander is testifying before a joint House and Senate VA committee on Wednesday. But there's a number of issues we'd like to see done legislatively. Pay Our Coast Guard Act is one of them. A lot of people may recall the 35-day government shutdown of 2019, the Coast Guard went to work every day defending our shores, and they weren't paid during that period. Eventually, they were paid retroactively, but, you know, if you have children at home and you're not making very much money to begin with, the bill's coming in, and there's a lot of pressure and a lot of unneeded stress. And during that time, the American Legion actually gave out $1 million in grants to Coast Guard families with children at home. We were basically doing what Congress was not, which was paying these guys for doing their jobs.
Wow. And is that, John, if I could just ask you, correct my understanding, but that's because, at least during peacetime, the Coast Guard doesn't fall under the chain of command of the Defense Department, because the Defense Department is still getting paid, correct? So this was a situation that the Coast Guard, because during peacetime it falls out, you know, like under Homeland Security, I think.
Actually, all the time. You're right. They're Department of Homeland Security. They used to be Department of Transportation, but since 9/11, when we created the Department of Homeland Security. The Coast Guard has fallen under that. And they weren't the only ones, you know, our Border Patrol officers and so forth that were also under DHS were not paid. So we just think, you know, the threats are still out there. They're going out there risking their lives every day for us. So that's really high on our, you know, agenda list, that they still have not passed the Pay Our Coast Guard Act. And, you know, the government shutdown was early of last year. So we kind of think that's a no-brainer. There's also other items like the VA Mission Act, which did pass last year. It's significant legislation for the VA, but there's some problems with that. They had the old Veterans Choice Program, which would allow veterans to go to the private sector doctors if they lived too far from a VA center, or for some reason, you know, where they lived, they couldn't be seen in a timely manner or have a specialty type care that was unavailable through VA. They can choose a private doctor of their choice. But the problem is they're not, the doctors are not being reimbursed at a fair rate. So they're turning down veterans.
Wow.
So, you know, during a lot of numerous studies, we found that the VA, and there are some exceptions where there is poor care, and Allegiant is always, you know, concerned about that, and we speak loudly. But overall, the VA is the best care anywhere. I mean, the patient satisfaction rate is extremely high. And our feeling is we don't want, because of the Mission Act, we don't want people to settle for the least expensive doctor when VA care is not available. We want them to be able to get, you know, the best care anywhere.
I see. Well, that makes a whole lot of sense. John, what are some of the other recommendations, some of the other big issues that the American Legion sees on kind of the legislative agenda for the rest of this Congress?
Well, there's a number of items. We have the Protect the GI Bill Act. The American Legion was instrumental in passage of the original GI Bill. It was written in 1944 by a past national commander of the American Legion, Harry Comrie. He wrote it handwritten on hotel stationery at the Mayflower Hotel.
Wow.
And we were warned by some other VSO, veterans organizations, that it would break the treasury. And Americans couldn't afford this, but it wound up for every dollar spent for the GI Bill brought back $16 to the U.S. economy, because these people, you know, these veterans before World War II, many of them, you know, higher education was something for just the elite classes.
Right.
And also guaranteed home ownership, the VA loans, VA mortgage program. And we were basically in a Great Depression through World War II, and then you had 16 million World War II veterans returning home, wanting jobs and homes, and, you know, and that's where the GI Bill came in. And it, really, saved the economy, the post-war economy, creating the housing boom and a number of other things. But more recently, with the GI Bill, the newer one that, you know, was, designed for the post 9/11 veterans, there's been issues with, for-profit schools, online educations, which were, some of them are very good, but some of them were exploiting veterans. There were cases where they would take the GI Bill benefits, drain the GI Bill benefits from the veterans account, and then the schools would go out of business. And the veterans would be without a degree or without a certificate, or there'd be deceptive marketing, you know, promising, certain things, and they find out the certificate's not even worth the piece of paper it's written on. So we like to see legislation creating a little bit better oversight. There's a lot of loopholes in some of the schools that are, you know, targeting veterans for their GI Bill benefits, requiring, for instance, that at least 10% in order to receive GI Bill funds, at least 10% of the money has to come in from the private sector, yet for some head-scratching reason, they aren't counting GI Bill money or Department of Defense tuition assistance. They're counting that as private sector money. Now, last I checked, Department of Veterans Affairs of DOD was funded by us, the taxpayers.
Right.
So so we like to see that loophole closed. And there's a number of other issues, you know, with the Legion has for decades been fighting for a flag protection amendment to the Constitution, which would, for close to 200 years, it was against a law, a federal code, to desecrate the American flag until the Supreme Court decision, Texas versus Johnson in 1989. And as you know, when the Supreme Court rules on something, the only way around it is to pass a constitutional amendment, because something that's in the Constitution can't be unconstitutional. So we're calling on Congress to take back the right that they've had for all those years, which was to protect the flag from desecration.
Wow, that's very good. Now, John, an issue that we've heard from other guests on our show and other veteran groups, and I know some other veteran groups in the past couple weeks have testified before Congress on the issue of toxic exposure and the open-air burn pits, which were common in Iraq and Afghanistan. It's my understanding the American Legion supports measures to make some progress on those issues as well. Is that correct?
Absolutely, we do. And I met with a group of veterans and wrote about this in the American Legion a couple of years ago, who served in Eniwetok Atoll in the Bikini Islands, Marshall Islands area. And in the 1950s and 60s, and there was nuclear testing there. We were blasting all the time there. And there was some compensation and disability. The cancer rates went through the roof. There was some disabilities awarded to the people during the atomic testing. But then when it stopped in the 1960s, well, we fast forward a couple of decades ahead. In the late 1970s, we sent military personnel to bury the radiation exposure, some of the stuff that was in the soil, the waste. But these guys who served in the 70s are ineligible for the benefits, and you know, not even for VA compensation, and they have an astronomical cancer rate as well. But it wasn't considered, you know, they weren't there when the blasts were going off. But any scientist can tell you that plutonium has a half-life in the soil, could be in the soil for 20,000 years. And they evacuated a lot of the natives of the islands. But, you know, you have military out there shoveling soil in 95 degree weather. They're not wearing their protective gear. In fact, many of the, you know, there's all kinds of photos and footage of these guys wearing shorts and sandals. Not because they were careless, but because they weren't properly instructed. And, you know, if you're working day in, day out, you know, with a bulldozer, you're probably not going to be wanting to wear a hazmat suit.
Right. Yeah, well, that's another important issue. I'm glad you mentioned that, because I don't think it receives enough attention in the media or even by a lot of veteran groups, quite frankly. And what we hear, you know, we've heard for decades the experience of the Vietnam veterans and Agent Orange, and now the toxic burn pits, and there's quite a bit of you know, more focus now, Camp Lejeune, toxic water, all those other issues related to contamination. John, let me shift gears and talk about maybe some other issues like health care for women veterans. I know the percentage of female veterans is the highest it's ever been in the history of our country, and there have been some issues about women receiving appropriate and equal and fair health care in the VA system. This is something that the American Legion is being proactive about, is my understanding. Am I correct?
You are correct. There's about 2 million women veterans today, which is the most we've ever had. It's growing by about 18,000 a year. So there is some legislation. We visited some excellent VA facilities that have, you know, women's clinics where they're private entrances and stuff. I mean, we've heard stories of catcalling and, you know, people, just women feeling uncomfortable, especially if they've been through, you know, military sexual trauma, which is unacceptably high in the military. You know, there's just some issues where, I mean, a few decades ago, they're probably, you know, even finding a woman's room in certain, you know, hospitals or clinics was a challenge. So we just want the VA is doing a good job with that, but we definitely would love to see more gender specific treatment benefits available.
That's very good. What about the issue of veteran suicide? You know, we hear that there's estimated 20 veterans that die by suicide every day. That's another issue of importance. What are your thoughts on that, and what does the American Legion support?
Well, first, I'm glad you brought that up. I like to, every opportunity when I hear that, I like to repeat the number for the Veterans Suicide Hotline, which is 1-800-273-8255. And even if someone's not suicidal, but if they're close to someone who is, that's a good number to call and to get some advice from some professionals. So again, that's 1-800-273-8255. Now, the American Legion in 2019, we did a mental health survey, and we found that more than 30% of those who responded, of these veterans who responded, knew a veteran who committed suicide, a veteran suicide victim. And then, 67% of those surveyed said they would be willing to get prevention training. So there is a lack of awareness of some of the VA services and the vet centers that can help. We'd like to see, a little bit less reliance on the opioids. There is some alternative therapies available for someone who maybe experienced PTSD that we fully support. But our national commander last week was touring a VA medical center, and one of the senior officials there said something that was really profound. It was about coronavirus, and nobody is in any way diminishing the seriousness of that. But he said, we spend billions for the coronavirus. Why aren't we doing something for the 20-plus veterans a day committing suicide? And we thought that was a really good question.
Yes.
So one that we didn't really have a good answer to. But he said he wasn't in any way diminishing the coronavirus, but
right.
We could spend more to make the veterans aware. The study of the 20 plus, really, I've seen numbers between 20 to 22 veterans a day that are killing themselves. But we found that only about six of those each day had sought VA treatment. So we think that once they get in the system, they're probably a little bit less, and there are exceptions. There are people who were enrolled in VA who've taken their own lives, but the VA does very well for the most part in responding. So, we think that outreach can make a very big positive effect.
Yeah, that is an important issue, and I know other veteran groups have touched on that and some of the echoed some of the points you made about the opioid issue, but also looking for alternative and perhaps even more effective care and treatment for some veterans, because it's not a matter of necessarily one size fits all for the treatment of PTSD and military sexual trauma and other psychological issues. John, let's turn to, if we can, share with our listeners more about the American Legion, its current membership eligibility rules, which I understand have expanded, and maybe some of the other projects.
For many years, I would get a phone call from a veteran who served, say, in the late 70s or late 1950s. It was outside our wartime periods, which were, Vietnam and then, like maybe between Vietnam and before Grenada, Beirut, in those windows there. And they would say, why can't I join the American Legion? And the answer, and I wasn't being flippant, was it would take an act of Congress. And literally, it did. We were congressionally chartered in 1919 by Congress as a wartime veterans organization. And we were founded by a group of World War I veterans. And because of that, there were only designated periods of service in which a veteran could join. So last year, Senator Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona introduced legislation called Let Everyone Get Involved in Opportunities for National Service, which spells out Legion, the Legion Act. Mm-hmm. And that was key legislation, which basically we had done a study, and we found out that we computed about 1,600 veterans have lost their lives or were seriously wounded in military actions that fell outside those windows, maybe covert actions that weren't in the designated war, But, right. And we also were in a Cold War for many years. So, Congress passed the Legion Act, which changed our charter. And our position is we're still a wartime veterans organization, but due to the dangers inherent in military service in all those periods that were previously blocked out, our position is that we have been in a state of war since December 7th, 1941, the attack of Pearl Harbor. So anybody who has served one day of honorable service, in the military, since, December 7th, 1941, is now eligible for the, American Legion. And that wasn't always the case before.
I see. Well, that's great information to know. Now, John, how can veterans find out more about the American Legion? What's the website and how can they go about joining? Because I know there's chapters. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Absolutely. The best source would be www.legion.org. That is our national website. And there's a Join Now button prominently on that homepage, or visit their local American Legion post in their community.
And there are thousands across the country, correct?
And overseas as well, yes. We have 55 departments, which are basically the 50 states. And then we have the Washington, D.C., so that's 51. We have Department of Puerto Rico. We have a Department of the Philippines for a lot of the veterans decide they want to stay over in the Far East. So we have Department of Philippines, we have a Department of Mexico, and we have a Department of France.
Wow.
Because you find military retirees and veterans all around the globe. So we have posts overseas. And not just those countries where those departments are. I mean, we have posts in Germany and the Netherlands and the United Kingdom. They also fall under the Department of France. So we have posts basically all around the world.
Wow. That's awesome. And hopefully our listeners will check into, joining and, finding out more and, more about the American Legion's, specific programs. Like you said, I was really impressed with an example you gave, earlier in the show, which was when the Coast Guard was not being paid during the government shutdown, that the American Legion was stepping up and essentially, filling that gap. That's wonderful.
And these were non-repayable grants. So, they ultimately were retroactively paid by the U.S. government. But we figured, you know, when you're stopping drug traffickers and rescuing people from storms and you're taking your life in your hands every day, they shouldn't have the unneeded stress of, am I going to be able to pay the light bill this week?
Absolutely. Now, John, I know your time is limited. We appreciate you being with us tonight, and I wish you and the national leadership with the greatest success this week in Washington. Before we go, anything you would like to share with us further?
We are celebrating our second century of service. I mentioned earlier we were founded in 1919, so last year was our big year, our centennial. And our national commander right now, he's a Marine named Bill Oxford, and he's also retired from the Army Reserve and the Army North Carolina National Guard. His theme for the year is Foundation for the Future. So we had a great first century that we're proud of, but we're heading into the second century stronger than ever.
Excellent. And John, thank you very much for being our guest tonight on the Veterans News Hour, and wish you and the American Legion leadership great success this week before Congress.
Thank you, and I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
Thanks, John.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. We'd like to thank John Rotto, the press secretary for the American Legion National Commander, for sharing his time with us this evening. It's very, very informative, and I applaud what the American Legion is doing on a whole host of important issues for veterans. And I think it's also interesting the projects that the American Legion has done. Before we move on to some of the other news from Washington this week, let me turn things back over to Rick Hurley.
Yeah, John, that was a good guest there. I was just thinking, I think over in the Villages, which is near Ocala, the American Legion there is the largest one in the country. for some reason. I forget what the number is, but it's a big, big number.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of
familiar
like
with
this,
that. Yeah. I don't know if you're familiar with that, David, but.
No, I am. Yeah.
Someone,
I know it. I
know someone
it's,
said it's like over 125,000.
Yeah. I can't remember the post number, but, the same thing in the Tampa Bay area, which is where I'm at. You know, there's so many, veterans, Tampa, St. Pete, Clearwater, and several counties in every direction, you know, north, east, and south of Tampa. And a lot of just, many American Legion posts, as well as other veteran groups. And, they do a lot for veterans. And, I think it was a good timing for John Rotter to be on our show because, as I say, this week, the American Legion leadership is going to be testifying. John said this Wednesday, so 2 days from now. And for those of you that are interested, go to, the website, veterans.senate.gov. You can also go to veterans.house.gov. Veterans.senate.gov, you can go and on Wednesday you should be able to watch a live stream of the American Legion's presentation. But you also download their more detailed presentation, as well as the presentations that have been made by other veteran groups going back over the last couple weeks. The most likely will be continuing. You know, this session of Congress will be for the rest of this year. This is the second year of the 2 year 116th Congress, and we know with the November election coming up, and the fact that in August that Congress is usually on their time where they're back in their districts, and then you have the period of campaigning for the November election. When you narrow those time frames down, there's really probably a window of about 4 months for Congress to do the work that the American Legion and these other veteran groups will be recommending. And when you read their presentations, you'll see that there really is a long list, kind of a long to-do list. If you look at it in terms of kind of a state of the union in terms of veteran issues, these presentations are rather detailed, but a lot of thought put behind them. And the next step will be, what will these committees be doing? Because it's not going to go, these issues aren't going to go to the House and the Senate for a full vote. They got to, without first passing review in the subcommittees and committees, Senate and House side. So we'll see what develops. We're going to keep an eye on it. Rick, go ahead.
Yeah, you're raising some, let me chime in here, David.
Absolutely.
Last Thursday, I spoke in front of about 100 people over in Dinellon, Florida, not too far from Ocala, retirement, predominantly veteran community. And, one of the things that when we got to the questions and answer period, one of the things that kept popping up was, how, unsatisfied the majority of these people, were with members of Congress and helping veterans. And, I wasn't prepared for it, quite frankly. They really started to slam, and they were naming names from, you know, Congress people, senators, even the president. I mean, they were really going after him. And I said, you know, people, when you're getting ready to think about who you're going to vote for next year, you know, and you go to these town hall meetings, ask these people who are running for Congress. What did you do if they're an incumbent? What did you do for us when you were in Congress? And if it's not an incumbent, and ask them, what are you going to do for us? What will you do for us? Because, you know, I'm quite frankly of the opinion that so many of these Congress people, they get to D.C. and they forget about the veterans. I think it's low priority issue for them. There are so many other things that they have to do. They have to take care of the people that helped get them there. You know, they're all indebted to the different people that, you know, pay their way to get up to D.C. So you really need to call these Congress people out and ask them, you know, are you on a VA committee? And when, if they were on a VA committee, what did you do? What did you do for us? What can you do? I mean, ask the questions. You got to ask the questions. And then, you know, when you get ready to pull the lever, you know, maybe that's going to be a big issue for you, and you'll decide whether or not you want to put that, send that person back to Congress. So, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, the new, this 2020 election, you'll see some people who are going to be voting, who will take into consideration, you know, these people who are running for office, exactly what they did if they're an incumbent, or what they will do if they're not an incumbent, in the future, for veterans, because there are a lot of areas in D.C. that we can fix so many problems that arise when it comes to taking care of our veterans. You know, John mentioned one thing about the, you know, again, not to downplay the coronavirus, but, you know, when he's talking about the suicide rate and the fact that we have 20 to 22 veterans a day,
right,
passing away. And why aren't we doing more about that? You know, and, you know, our Congress people have to step up and answer the question. Why aren't you doing more about that? What can be done? So that's just my two cents. And I hope people will really start, you know, cause the campaign trail starts now. Everyone's out there running around, starting to get their, feet wet. So it's not too early to ask those hard questions and then make your decision, because clearly the room full of people that I saw were very, very unhappy with what's going on in D.C. So anyway, back to you, David.
Well, those are great points, Richard. And, you know, one of the more effective, in my opinion, veteran organizations is Military Veterans Advocacy. We've had John Wells, Commander John Wells, on our show a number of times. And his organization focuses on three prongs of attack, basically, in being effective, which is to educate, get the word out, educate veterans, educate the public, educate members of Congress, but also to legislate, not that they legislate, but that they lobby. They go to Congress. They walk the halls of Congress. They make appointments. They meet with legislators. But then the third prong is litigate, which is they use the court system, which they did successfully with the Blue Water Navy issue. You remember the big Procopio decision a year ago, which then...
Great decision.
Great decision. And you know what? That is what set the fire under Congress to pass the Blue Water Navy Vietnam Veteran Act in June. And a lot of people then forget about the Procopio decision. And without the Procopio decision happening, I seriously wonder whether Congress would have been sufficiently motivated, despite years of effort of John Wells, Military Veterans Advocacy, and other groups to try to lobby Congress. But it really is a three-pronged attack: education, legislation, and litigation. And my point being that approach needs to be applied to these other issues. A few people can make a big difference, as we've seen on some of these other issues. And the open-air burn pit is one of them. What John Rotto mentioned about the islands in the Pacific, contamination, you know, because of the nuclear testing and the veterans that developed cancers, et cetera. That's another issue where there wasn't enough education, there wasn't enough coverage in the media about that. But we see that more and more. And the great thing about the internet and the fact that we have this show, we hope to help educate and inform people about these and other veteran issues. So,
you know, look what Mr. Ensminger and Mike Partain did when it came to the Camp Lejeune water contamination.
Another great example.
I mean, those guys, they started, I think, started in 1997 and Mike got involved around 2006, 2006, 2007. And it still took like 10 more years, but they finally, you know, got the ball over the goal line. And, you know, we now have some disability compensation going to these, Camp Lejeune water contamination veterans. And, you know, I know there's a Camp Lejeune water contamination, Facebook page, survivors. I think there's about 16,000, 17,000 on that Facebook page now. And you see all, I mean, there's every day there's these men and women who were at Camp Lejeune are constantly writing, you know, different things that happened to them. They talk about their status with what's going on with them and their claims and and they're helping each other. It's really cool to watch them give information to each other and try to help each other. So, yeah, I mean, it would be great that we, you know, can't really rely. Well, we'd like to be able to rely upon Congress, but in the meantime, there's all these great groups out there.
Yeah, and that's where the action really starts. That's where the ball gets rolling, so to speak. And, you know, Congress, individual members of Congress, they've got so many issues on their plates, and they're dealing with their own internal bureaucracy of Congress and a lot of other problems, plus the fact that many of them, unfortunately, are kind of forced by the nature of the system to spend a lot of their time raising money just so they can stay in office. And that fundraising then has an effect even on which committees they want to be on. I saw a video a couple years ago by a couple congressmen, one from Kentucky, who was talking about, you know, when he arrived in Congress, and this was several congressmen talking about this issue of the pressure on them to raise money for their political party in particular, and also to be on particular committees. There were A committees, and there were B committees, and there were C committees, and the Veteran Affairs was a C committee. It wasn't one of great prestige. There wasn't one where you have expensive and wealthy lobbying groups that could contribute and be fundraisers like some of these other committees. So that's part of it too. But there is a lot of hope out there because, like you say, Rick, the Camp Lejeune issue is an excellent one. The Blue Water Navy issue and the groups that have really got involved in educating what Jerry Ensminger and Mike Partain and others in the group just an awesome effort. But it does require a lot of time and sacrifice on their part, as they will tell you, as they have told us whenever they've been on our shows before. So, but that's what we're going to see. We're going to see some long slogs ahead on these burn pit issues, because as I've been reading and analyzing these presentations from various veteran groups, there seems to be a great focus on thinking there needs to be lots of studies, and there needs to be presumptive lists. But unfortunately, it seems like some of these veteran groups on the toxic exposure presumptive list is they will focus, for instance, on a presumption that the veterans were exposed to the toxic substances without taking it the important step which should follow, which is not just that they were exposed to the toxic contaminants, but that they developed a disease or cancer which the VA will presume, will concede, was caused by that exposure. That's what we see with Agent Orange now, but that was a many decades fight to get to that point. So my concern is that Congress is going to give lip service to this. That's my concern, that they're going to pass some bill with a very fancy title that these members of Congress will say, well, I support the burn pits bill. Yo, yeah, well, what does it say? Well, it says we're going to study this. Well, studying could be years and years with nothing happening. We know that. That's what happened with some of the Agent Orange issues. But what can be done with enough pressure is that they can hold Congress's feet to the fire, and specifically the House and Veteran Affairs committees, hold hearings, call in these experts, rely on the expertise and the studies of decades of EPA and OSHA and other studies which explain why you can't do open air burn pit in the continental United States. People won't tolerate it. It's illegal because it's harmful. And when you have service members who are forced to live and work within you know, throwing distance of these pits, which are burning 24 hours a day, and they were as large as 20 acres, and they're burning everything under the sun, that it should not require a big leap of faith to make that presumption of service connection. That's what they need to do, in my opinion. Next week, I'm going to talk more about the presentations of these various organizations. And it's an issue we're going to continue to track.
You know, David, we've had various people on the show talking about the burn pits. Lauren Price is one. And, you know, if you haven't caught those shows in the past, you know, all our shows are archived. And I really recommend that you go back and look at those shows, because, you know, they really give a descriptive, presentation as to exactly what these burn pits are all about. You know, it's one thing to say burn pits and, you know, talking about the fact that, yeah, it causes certain respiratory illnesses and diseases, et cetera. But when you hear people who actually were exposed and in the burn pits, and you hear about how big they were. And I think Lauren described it at one point as if you've ever seen a tanker, an oil tanker blow up, and what happens after it blows up. And she said, that's what a burn pit can look like. Then you get that vision in your brain, and you start thinking that these men and women had to then work in that environment. So please go back and take a look at our archive shows on the burn pits, and you really see what a horrific experience it was for any military man or woman who had to endure that.
Yeah, Rick, if I could add, follow up on that point, one of our guests back in, I believe it was September of 2017, was film director Greg Lovett, who directed and produced a documentary called Delay, Deny, Hope You Die, How America Poisoned Its Soldiers. And the film came out in 2017, and it deals with open burn pits. And for those of you that would appreciate kind of a visual description, to watch a film on a whether it's on your computer or even a big screen, it's possible to do that. The Burn Pit documentary has a page on Facebook. Go to Facebook and type in the words in the Facebook search engine, Burn Pit Documentary, and it'll bring up the Facebook page for the Burn Pit documentary. You can purchase a copy of the DVD, and if you're interested, let's say that you're a member of the American Legion post in your community, or VFW, or AMVETS, or another of the veteran organizations, and you want to host a showing of the film on a big screen, because it's even better to see it on a full movie screen, you can do that too. You go to the website tugg.com, which is TUGG.com. There's two G's there. TUGG.com. And under the films tab on that website, look for the film. It's called Delay, Deny, Hope You Die. That's the film that Greg Lovett directed and produced. And he has on that film, he has footage of these burn pits as they were burning. He interviews veterans. He interviews some doctors. He interviews some members of Congress. And it's a very insightful film. It's about 50 minutes in length. But I encourage people to check that film out. Or if you want, like I say, host a screening. Tug.com is an interesting website. It's basically a crowdfunded way of having a film on the big screen. And back in 2017, when this documentary came out, there were many people, including myself and Lauren Price, that were promoting that film in the Tampa Bay area, for instance. But it was shown various theaters around the country. If you're not able to do that, you can buy a DVD version of it. Like I say, go to Facebook, type in the words Burn Pit Documentary in the Facebook search engine, and you should find out more about that. That's a good starting point, and should motivate people, because they will see the interviews of veterans that were suffering, and some that actually ended up dying. And these, keep in mind, these are young, healthy men and women in their 20s, to go over and serve. They come back with serious respiratory illnesses and rare cancers that are logically linked to the toxic substances. So check out that film.
And more evidence in support of that is, I think it was the doctor from Vanderbilt who was treating and doing the study, and had essentially concluded and that there was a nexus between the conditions that he was seeing and the exposure to the burn pit, so much so that they stopped using this doctor.
Yeah, that was really strange. Very.
I mean, that to me is like, that's like, well, here's the guy who's putting his stamp of approval and we need to do something about it. And next thing you know, he's being told, well, we're not going to use you anymore.
Right. Well, what he said in the film is that, you know, he has all these young men and women, these veterans coming back from the war, and he finds his waiting room filled up with these young men and women who, as I say, when they deployed, when they went over to Iraq and Afghanistan, they were very fit and healthy. They had to be, or the military wouldn't have sent them over there. And they come back and they've got all these rare respiratory illnesses and other things, that these were illnesses like constrictive bronchiolitis that were not being picked up by an ordinary x-ray or some other test which were routinely done. He had to do further testing and biopsies, for instance, and before he was able to make those diagnoses. But he was offering the professional opinion as an expert, making that connection with the toxic fumes and other things that were there. So this is one of the most immediate pressing issues for these veterans, because it affects their obviously their health and their families, and they need to be able to get access to VA health care and also disability compensation. So it's an issue we're going to continue to track on this show.
You know, and the other thing, David, is we don't want to see these victims of the burn pits, these men and women, veterans, have to take to wait as long as the Camp Lejeune veterans have had to wait.
Right.
I mean, it's just it's ridiculous. So something has to be done.
Right, right. And as you say, we have quite a few shows over the last 3 years. We've had Lauren Price from Veteran Warriors. We've had Greg Lovett. We've had other guests on. And another good website on the larger issue of toxic contamination, which includes Camp Lejeune, is civilianexposure.org. And we had a guest from that organization on a few years ago, and hopefully we will have him back again sometime soon. But this is an issue that affects veterans at many installations around the country. It's just gradually getting more attention. But it comes back to, you know, the need to educate, look into these issues. Congress seems to be rather reactive to pressure put on by veteran groups and individuals, and that's the case here as well. So, well, we've covered a lot tonight. We want to thank our special guest, John Rotter, the American Legion, for being on our show. Next week, we will talk more about the presentation that the National Commander for the American Legion is going to make 2 days from now. Again, go to veterans.senate.gov on Wednesday, and you can watch the presentation. You can also download the written presentation. Should be very informative. And we'll continue to follow these and others. Rick, before we go to our coaching into care segment tonight, anything else that you'd like to talk about?
Well, let's briefly talk about our StopWar.Today project.
Well,
you can check out our website at StopWar.Today, and we are helping to publicize the work of the Cost of War Project of Brown University. Their website is costofwar.org, that's costofwar.org, as well as the work of many other groups and individuals. That includes publicizing the United States Institute of Peace. Check out the website at usip.org. The USIP needs to grow into a larger and more effective national organization, but needs a lot more funding and resources from Congress. We also recommend an outstanding book called A Mighty Case Against War by Kathy Beckwith. It provides an insightful analysis of America's past wars and ways they could have been prevented, and provides the path to a new way of thinking and how to promote peace and stop glorifying war. We have free copies of Kathy Beckwith's book, A Mighty Case Against War, for anyone who sends David an email with their address. He'll send you one, and his email is lawcorey1@verizon.net. That's lawcorey1@verizon.net.
And people are interested in that book. In the last 2 weeks, I've had requests for 7 copies, believe it or not, from various places around the country contacting me, and including through the Facebook page for StopWar.Today project. So if people are interested in the book, I think it's an outstanding book, and it's certainly worth reading. And but also check out the website for the United States Institute of Peace, USIP.org. It's an organization that I'd venture to say most Americans have never even heard of. They don't even know it exists, even though it was created in 1984 by legislation from Congress. This is during the Reagan administration. And it's gone through kind of ups and downs as far as funding. And there have been some attempts to zero out its budget, but it's still hanging on there. And it has an impressive modern looking headquarters now. It's had for about 8 or 9 years on the northwest corner of the Washington Mall in Washington, D.C. Big atrium. It's a very modern looking building that looks south. Directly at the Lincoln Memorial. That's where it's located. So if you're ever in D.C., Washington, D.C., check out the United States Institute of Peace, USIP.org is the website. It was created, the idea of members of Congress who happened to be World War II veterans, the greatest generation, who'd been through war and had seen the devastation of a world war. And they wanted to create an educational organization that would be kind of on par with the military service organization, West Point, Air Force Academy, Naval Academy, etc., for education, but to educate people on diplomacy and peace building, etc. And that's part of the USIP, the United States Institute of Peace mission. The other part is actual practical peace building, diplomacy, conflict resolution, international mediation, studying conflict and studying ways to resolve it. But they do have educational component. Again, go to their website. They have resources for every level of interest and knowledge and expertise, from school age children to colleges to academics and PhDs that are studying these issues, as well as practitioners. So it's an organization that I think needs more attention, and that's why we're mentioning it. All right, Rick, we're rapidly running out of time.
Yeah, we're about ready to wind up for tonight. I want to remind everybody about the Coaching Into Care program. It's a reminder to veterans and their families about how important this program can be to them, because it helps them who might be having difficulty transitioning to home life. As we know, for veterans, returning to home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. You know, we're just trying to help them get some independence again back into civilian life. And so Coaching Into Care can help in that regard. And it offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. The toll-free number is 1-888-823-7458, and that's Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Again, the Coaching Into Care number is 1-888-823-7458. In addition, I would like to once again remind listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also has a Veterans Crisis Line to help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they did not get the help they needed. Helps them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, the Veterans Crisis Line can help. The number is 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Let's try to reduce that number of suicides, daily suicides, which is currently between 20 and 22, and let's get that down. And actually, let's eliminate it. Back to you, David.
Thanks, Rick. It's time for us to go for this evening. I'd like to thank our special guest, John Rotter of the American Legion National Headquarters, for being our special guest. I'd like to thank all of you for listening to the Veterans News Hour here on BBS Radio Station 1. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Joyce and Joe Chivaroli and Corey and Hurley Law Group. I'd like to thank our producer at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom. Hope you'll tune in next week, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 Central, 5 p.m. Mountain, and 4 p.m. Pacific Time, here on BBSRadio.com, Station 1, for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. Until then, we hope you have a great week.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on VBSRadio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.